In a world, four friends, one mission.
Mikey, what are you doing?
I'm doing the thing for the podcast.
It's not that hard, bud.
Dude, just say the name.
Fine. It's the Freedom Friends Podcast.
Did you know that one of the most recorded, as far as speeches and speaking and oration and all that kind of stuff, one of the most recorded people in history was Julius Caesar.
Okay.
Like the first one. Like they wrote down like everything he fucking said.
Yeah.
And in all of those records, he never actually once said thank you to anybody.
Oh, fuck him. That's why.
Well, no, it's because he didn't speak English. So anyway. Well,
it makes a lot of sense.
Welcome to the Friends Podcast. I like your approach to it. You were like, yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
I'm Caesar, bitch. Welcome to the Freedom Friends Podcast. There's people to pay the bills. Here they are.
Guys, it wouldn't be the Freedom Friends if we didn't talk about our number one sponsor, Warfighter Tobacco. Obviously, you guys have seen us all smoke them. We're here to talk about a quality product that everybody can enjoy. The great equalizer, as we've called it, the Warfighter Tobacco Stick. And it's not just cigars. They've got humidors, travel humidors, cutters, lighters, everything you need to get started on that journey. Check out warfightertobacco.com and use that code FTFO. Score yourself that sweet, sweet 15%. If you want to know my personal favorite, I'm a 762 Field guy. I like that Sumatra, real nice and even keeled cigar. Great for us beginner smokers, right? And I'm told that these taste even better when you're listening to the Freedom Friends Podcast. Now, back to the show. This episode is brought to you by Grill Your Ass Off. It's no secret. We're all middle-aged dudes who love barbecue. Grill Your Ass Off is our main go-to for our spices. That's what we use, man. Whether you're doing burgers on the grill, steaks, or my personal favorite, a little bit of pork belly burnt ends, right? They've got you covered on all of that. They also have salsas. They also have seasonings and spices. They got beer salts. They've got everything, man. Check them out. GrillYourAssOff.com/FreedomFriendsPodcast or use the code FreedomFriendsPodcast at checkout.
All right.
Yeah. And Mikey's not here.
Yeah.
Oh. He's still falling out of airplanes or something like that.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a really good picture.
That was a good picture.
Yeah. Eating himself out of the aircraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a little weird to see like a vintage aircraft and then like a modern free fall.
You know, the best part is like it's a vintage aircraft and there's like eight GoPros mounted to it. Yeah. They're all over on the wings, everywhere. On the tails.
Where were GoPro? Where were you in World War II? God damn it.
No. There was just a much bigger apparatus.
Yeah.
They still did it because there's all those videos of them like exiting the bird and all that kind of stuff.
So you guys have watched the Masters of the Sky, right?
Yeah. Great.
Don't ruin it. I'm like five episodes behind.
It's so good. Oh, okay. The only thing I'm going to say is like when you see the scenes where all of the aircraft are in the air at the same time.
It's wild.
And then I watched a documentary after the fact. And like that, it was true. Like there were.
Oh, did you watch that? The documentary they put on Netflix?
Well, like I downloaded Amazon it also. For tomorrow, but I watched a little bit of it. But there like thousands of aircraft in the air fighting at the same time.
Yeah,
like my biggest question watching that show is like, you know, the B-17s had all the gunners, right?
Yeah.
All the bubbles.
How are they not shooting their own guys? Holy
cuz they were all over the
place. No, it's a movie, but
I want to know how the guy in the top turret doesn't shoot the tail.
Well, that's just triggered us.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you they did.
100%.
I guarantee you they did.
We got it on the tail.
We're hitting the tail. It was Luftwaffe. I saw it. Fucking saw this Kraut bastard fucking shot the tail off the bird.
I made eye contact with it.
But then they had the P-51s and like all the shit scene, at the same time.
Fucking incredible when they're doing some of the later war stuff where the Mustang was finally in the fight. And because as famous as that bird is, I don't think a lot of people realize that. That wasn't like when we first started doing bombardments, we just had all these fucking Mustangs around. Like, right. They didn't come on until like fucking later.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Fortress was really early. The 17 was really, really early. And it's made like shit. Like that is a paper airplane.
After watching that series, like how they had to fix them every damn mission. Yeah. I had no idea that that many airmen got killed
That, oh, in the hundredth Air Corps.
Well, that those regularly, like that was right. That's insane.
And one of the cool things, that, and it has to do with what we're talking about, but I don't know if they ever mentioned it in the show. Like I said, I'm behind, so. But there were studies that came out about the aircraft that were damaged that made it back and landed, and they put where like an overview of the aircraft and where all the impacts were on it.
Yeah.
Right. And then one guy was like, oh, we need to reinforce all these areas. And he's like, absolutely not. These are the ones that made it back and landed. We don't have to reinforce.
Those areas are good.
Any hole, right? We need to reinforce where there aren't holes.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that's what.
Because we know that none of these areas are necessary for flight.
None whatsoever. This plane made it back. Yeah. That's good. Those holes are acceptable. And that was the thing about
the B-17 is that thing felt like, it's almost like those dudes just kind of willed them home. Yeah. It was just like.
Justin, do you have any, can you search and see how many B-17s were made used.
But that scene towards the later end of the series, and this doesn't really spoil anything, it's World War II. Yeah, like if you can't figure out what the fuck.
What do you mean? I don't know what happened. How does it end?
Yeah. But when the P-51 gets involved, when the Mustang actually takes to the, and that scene though, where they're flying in like the larger formation, and they're like, oh, we have all of these escort aircraft.
Yeah.
And they're like, and it's shown from the 17's point of view, and it's all those squadrons that are just fucking ripping by it. And you're like, so let me get this straight. We put 200 B-17s in the sky. And then every B-17 had an escort squadron with them. Yeah. And then, yeah. And then you've got like the Flying Fortress, I think has, you have the two like suspension mounted guns, the Axis guns that were on each side. And then you've got the top and bottom bubbles.
And then the rear bubble. I think there's a rear.
And then the rear bubble. So like, and none of these guys accidentally shot down a Mustang.
Another B-17. Like, come on.
A neighbor. Wow. It was just like, oh, so my bad.
There were 12,731 B-17s built.
12,000.
And 4,735 were lost during the war. After the war, if the planes had flown combat missions, they were sent for smelting at boneyards. Only six planes that survived today have seen combat.
Wow.
Most of them were used in the 50s and 60s in military and civilian capacities.
And if I'm not mistaken, the B-17 is the one that Ford stopped production and was making the B-17.
Yeah.
And so they had that. It was like a mile-long building in Detroit. They shut down their major car factories. I'm pretty sure this is the B-17.
The Boeing company made the B-17.
Right, but they did it in the Ford factories. I think Ford shut down to give them their production.
A lot of these were built in Seattle at Boeing.
Oh, is it Seattle? Which one's the one that they maybe did, that Ford made?
The B-25, maybe.
Was it the B-25?
I don't know.
But literally, like...
Ooh, well, actually, I take it back. Douglas made some also.
Yeah, but they would, like, go in the front side of the building, it'd come out the back, and the back end, like, went immediately into a runway, so they would roll that bitch out, and it would, like, go down a runway, and they did, like, a 12-mile circle flight, and was like, it's fucking good, and then that shit just went. It, like, that was the entire process, and it was like, holy fuck.
Yeah. Douglas, Lockheed, and
I thought everybody made them.
Yeah, Lockheed, Vega.
Well, that's crazy, right? Because you could never today imagine all three major companies making the same thing.
Well, you gotta think. So, I guarantee you like, it's kind of like when you look at some of the M16s, right? Some were stamped Mattel.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, like, not, and it was not pretty just much anybody that had the manufacturing capabilities.
Back it up. The M1 carbine.
Oh, fuck.
You have Singer typewriter.
Yeah.
You have...
what was that?
A postal meter.
Yes, postal meter.
That's the one. Yeah. I have a postal meter. You know, like, that's crazy.
But I think what a lot of people don't understand is, like, the Army made... So the military will greenlight a design. Yeah. So sure, like let's say it's a Browning design or it's a Colt design, whatever it is.
Right.
Like they designed it, but we're at war.
Yeah, yeah.
So like true war.
But even at war now, you're not gonna see all the companies making F-22s.
But we don't need to quick response stuff like that.
Right.
Well, like whole new companies will stand up. Back then it was like, we're leaving and we're leaving now. So all of you that can make this fucking design.
Yeah.
We're going to pay you to make
it. What's it called? Like it's called like the War Act. Right?
I think, I think now, like if they're like, oh, we need F-22 Raptors, there's only like two people that can make them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think.
But it, like, say wartime.
And I wouldn't want Boeing to make it right
say
now.
Say wartime.
Raytheon can produce it because Raytheon makes most of the jets.
Right.
Like the actual jets. That go in that shit.
Yeah, but imagine if Boeing threw their hat in the ring to be like, hey, U.S. government, we'll make these. They and they're like, no, yeah, we're okay. You guys can't even make a 737.
Yeah, but have you seen that 777X that they designed?
That can't fly. It has more fucking problems and failures in it. But even the people that built it are like, yeah, I'm not riding one of those.
No.
But if like the War Act happened today and they're like, oh, we need 7.62 ammo. I'm like, I have a fucking, we'll set that
shit. Yeah, we'll get progressivism. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Yep. Yeah,
but and that's kind of how it works. Yeah. That's why, like, you'll see some of these guys, and they take it out of context. There's actually a really funny dude all over the internet that does this whole, like, you know, hey company, what is it that you make? And they like dig all the way into their history of everything they've ever made. And a bunch of these old companies are like, we're also involved with this cult. And it's like, well, yeah.
Like, let's deep dive Volkswagen for a minute.
The early 19th century.
Nothing happened.
The early 19th century was rife with cults. So, like, it was everywhere. But a lot of these people, and it's like, yes. In the middle of World War II, Mattel made weapons of war.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of World War II, the Ball Mason Jar Company made shit for the war effort. Yeah. Do you know why? Every company in the U.S. made shit for the war effort.
Well, I think that War Act, the companies got paid by the government. Yeah. Yeah. So it was like, okay.
That, and you got to look at the economy as a whole. When something at that scale happens,
yeah,
right, it's not a strong economy.
No,
people aren't going true out spending
economy.
Money.
Yeah, true wartime economy is rough, and so a lot of times the only way to keep these companies alive
is
it's like, hey, you have to stop making toys, and you've got to start fucking making.
Or toys. You can keep making like, toys, but nobody has the money. Christmas is not really Christmas.
I hate to tell you this, but we gave everybody cheese rations. They're not buying Barbie. Yeah. You're going to need to figure something out.
All that extra money that people have, yeah, they bought war bonds.
Yeah, for the effort. Like, it's like a whole thing.
So, Jazz, what you were talking about was Willow Run, which is where Ford Motor Company built one B-24 Liberator every 63 minutes.
It was the B-24. Okay. So it was Willow
every
Run.
Every 63
minutes. So it was one fucking building. So here's the deal. I talked about this. Well, it was the B-24, and I brought this up because they were talking about the Tesla plant up by Coda outside of Austin, which is that mile-long building where raw material comes in one end.
Which is the fastest construction project in the world.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how fast it happened.
18 months.
But
start to finish.
That thing's huge.
That thing is designed to where raw materials go in one end, and literally in the other end, a car pops out.
Right.
Like it's literally like a vending machine. Like you goes in.
Yeah.
It's like those things where you stamp a penny.
Yeah, you,
like,
except for a dollar, you put 80,000.
Yeah. And then a car pops out. Well, they did that, but with a fucking aircraft.
Yeah.
And it took an hour. It was, shit went in one side, and the shit that popped up.
Ford started in what, 23?
Holy shit.
1923, I think, is when Ford started.
So,
and so in 44, they were the masters of the fucking assembly line.
Invented the shit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is, and so.
1903.
Yep, 1903. June 16, 1903.
Yeah, so 40 years later, you were talking about the world subject matter experts on.
Yeah.
How do we go from nothing to a thing as fast as humanly possible? And Ford was like, we got you, boo. Yeah.
Approximately 18,500 B-24s were made. 8,685 were made by Ford.
So almost.
It holds the record. It holds the record as the world's most produced bomber.
So what did the B-20? I got to look up the B-24.
The Liberator? Now it's a sex furniture.
That one.
Yeah, that one.
So that must have taken, like, it must have replaced the B-17 then, or
well, air crews tended to prefer the B-17. General staff favored the B-24 and procured it in huge numbers for a wide variety of roles.
Well, I think the crews probably preferred it because the B-17 was far more armed. It was far easier to defend it. And I bet you
there's less guns on a B-24 the way it looks.
No, that's what I'm saying. The Flying Fortress was more defensible. The crew had more guns that they could do to defend the aircraft. But I bet you the 24 has something like it has a higher payload.
Or it flies better or something.
Yeah. Well, the general staff probably like it carries more or some shit like that. But it's like, yeah, but we die more often in it. Like, could we? Willow Run was.
It's wild. Every 63 minutes.
A new plane popped out at the end of that thing.
So it says, here's the question. Was the B-24 better than the B-17? The B-24 was by far the most produced Allied aircraft. It flew faster and farther than the B-17 with twice the payload.
Okay.
So there you go. It probably had less guns.
But yeah. And the crew is the same size, 10 men.
Right. Less guns carries more.
Yeah. Right, what are the two reasons the B-24 was called the Flying Coffin?
Because there was no fucking guns on it.
Due to its singular entry point near the rear of the aircraft with only a single exit point. So that's why.
But that's also why it could get produced so fast. There was just less to it. But I mean, that is still just insane. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine sitting there and the time it would take me to smoke the cigar? I could watch shit go in one end of a building and an airplane come out the other.
14,000 B-24s were produced. 6,000 of them were shot down.
They missed out on the opportunity to capitalize. You get one of those little rail cars that just goes right next to the production line, and you put like 10 dudes in a rail car.
You just build it around them?
Yeah, and it has a bar cart and cigars.
Right.
And it's a 63-minute trip. And you pay for a cigar and you get as many drinks as you want. And it just goes down the assembly line.
And then they build
you just watch one aircraft start from like a dude with a piece of sheet metal.
Yeah.
And then it ends up like they fucking started that bitch up and take off.
Could you imagine that? If we popped out some camp chairs outside of Willow Run and you sit there and we light a cigar and we watch raw material going in one end. And then 63 minutes later,
goodness.
Right about the time the cigar is done.
How much?
A whole goddamn airplane just popped out the other side. You'd be like.
How much do you guys...
I'd look at this cigar and be like, fuck, I'm not doing shit with my life. Right?
Useless.
How much do you think the B-24 cost?
4 raspberries.
$60 million.
$240,000, which translates to $2.6 million in today's currency.
Which even in today's
currency...
And
we lost 6,000 of them.
But even in today's over currency, half. Now $2.6 million is nothing. It costs that to fix one of our aircraft.
Yeah.
It, like
But still, that's nothing. A lot for... Well, I mean, I guess I knew what a grease gun cost. They did those on the cheap.
Jesus, yeah. But that is a stamped metal tube of death. That is just a
kind of what a B-24 is. But
it's stamped aluminum.
It's a stamped aluminum tube of death. Yeah.
Anyway, we
don't build like that
anymore. I love World War II and I love aircraft, so I could talk about this shit all day.
The B-24 is cool though, and that's why I got confused with the B-7. It's a B-24 if you don't know, but you know what a B-7 because you've watched the show. A B-24 looks just like a B-17 without the bubbles. Take the bubbles off of it, and it looks like it.
A little different.
63 minutes.
That's crazy.
63 minutes.
Yeah.
I've had poops longer than that.
That's stretching.
But I'll bet your legs go to sleep just the same as fast in the plane as it does on the toilet.
I'm pretty sure my max poop is like 20 something.
Depends on how deep a rabbit hole I'm going down. Like if the internet's got me, then it's like
depends on how good my For You page is on TikTok.
Which apparently is getting banned.
TikTok?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the TikToks getting banned.
We're totally cool with China owning our toll roads.
It's more that we're handing over more fucking rights to. We're handing over the so the government can.
No, this isn't the first time the government's done this.
Yeah,
and essentially,
this
all
actually
they're doing
isn't even the first time they've gone after TikTok.
No, it hasn't worked.
TikTok is the
but
mask.
Now what they're saying. Right. The way the news is spinning it, they're saying that they're banning TikTok
on campuses.
Right. They're not banning TikTok anywhere. That is the ultimatum. Right. The premise of it is we can't have communist China own a company that collects data from U.S. citizens.
No, but we can let them own roads, bridges and toll roads.
Farmland.
The nation and farmland.
If the conglomerate that. The communist China owns that part of the company because it's all weird how they structured it. If they're willing to sell it, then it continues business as usual. Nothing gets banned. Nothing gets blocked.
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
What I thought was hilarious is that they called in what the CEO of TikTok and questioned in front of Congress, like what, 2 months ago or whatever.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
2 months ago, 3 months ago. And they kept going like, are you a member of the Communist Party of China? And he's like, no, I'm Singaporean. Like I'm from Singapore. And I'm like, okay, I hate to tell you this, but if
TikTok, it doesn't matter where you live.
If TikTok hired me as the CEO, I can go, nope, I'm not a member of the Communist Party of China. I'm not Chinese. I was born in Oklahoma, like a heartland of the United States.
Yep.
that's still communist China cutting the fucking check. All that data is still going back to the mothership, whatever the fuck that, because China has their own version of TikTok. So here's the hilarious part. TikTok in the United States is completely fucked. Like there's anything and everything you could possibly want to see is on that fucking.
Yep.
Right.
Except I can't put up cool videos that we make on Warfighter without getting banned.
Well, yeah, they don't like cigars.
No, no, no. I can see a camel toe from space.
Yep.
But I can't see a cigar. Like those are, it's the weirdest shit on the planet.
100%.
And heaven help you if you touch a trigger.
That's one big
if your finger's anywhere near a trigger on anything, it could be a Nerf gun.
Yeah.
You're going down. But, you know, if you want to put on leggings that are see-through, it's like, well, she's covered. And it's like, what? How's this balanced? Like, I'm down, but I want to be able to be like,
I'm not complaining. I just want to understand.
That new cigar, that new cigar from Warfighter looks great. And I could totally Bill Clinton that bitch with one. That'd be fucking awesome. Like, it's like, I just want equal opportunity.
They need to make like interactive videos so I can like scroll one into the other and be like, ooh, look what I'm doing with the cigar.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is like, I'm not saying any of it needs to be censored. I'm just saying I want it equal and open.
Yeah, like, if you can show your vagina, I should be able to show my cigar.
Did you guys
see? That's fair.
I think that sounds balanced, sir.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's not like I'm Trent. Never
Please
mind.
Don't be gonna bring up the Don Lemon interview with Elon Musk.
No. I was going to bring up when.
Did you see that?
I did. That was gold. And I love that people are somehow trying to
villainize Elon Musk for it.
Yes, but they're also like, well, you know, when you get somebody that leans right and you ask them pointed questions, they get flustered and they can't even continue the conversation. And I'm like, no fucking way that you're trying to spin Don Lemon's line of questioning
first
to
off,
make it like legitimate.
Let's look
because
at,
I don't know.
They were, all his questions were answered and there was all bullshit.
Okay. So Don Lemon, the dude that used to be the CNN anchor, got fired.
Yep.
Right. Now has a podcast.
Okay.
Because that's what these guys do now. These news anchors.
Yeah.
If you can find, it's episode one.
No.
So episode one of Don Lemon's new podcast, he somehow got Elon Musk on it. Now I'm pretty sure Elon Musk took it just because he knew what the fuck Don Lemon was going to try and talk to him about. And so since Elon Musk is quite literally the world's richest troll,
right,
he took the interview. So there's a couple.
Do you know why he took the interview? So Don Lemon, was going to get hired by X.
Oh.
Okay. And one of the stipulations that Don had was to interview Elon. I'm trying to find the rest of his demands.
Who are the other fired ones that now have podcasts that are still trying to be relevant? Don Lemon, there's that other.
There's a couple from
CNN. There's a couple now that have gotten fired. Tucker Carlson. All these guys have gotten fired. So they've gone to the internet and they have a shitty podcast like this one. So Don Lemon got to interview Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He's talking about, he's trying to spin it to where X has a responsibility to control what's on the platform.
Oh.
Based on not whether things are legal or not.
Just.
Based on an emotional base.
Right. And so Elon just keeps going like, no, that's censorship. He's like, it's not censorship. It's responsibility. He's like, that's censorship. And so Don keeps throwing out these words and to where Elon just keeps going like, you're just throwing out buzzwords for censorship.
Yeah.
Like this is still just censorship. You honestly, something that is not against the law that makes you uncomfortable is actually the definition of freedom of speech.
Yeah.
That's exactly what freedom of speech is. Just because you don't like it.
Right.
Doesn't mean it should be deleted.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you have a responsibility. He's like, so, but you could read it on the internet. And he's like, but you own this platform. I was like, so you want me to shut down the internet? And he's like, well, you don't own the internet. And he's like, I don't own censorship. And so he's like, put it on my platform.
He's like, we use an open source AI or algorithm.
Yeah.
He's like, it's out there for everybody to, you know.
And he's like, and the big thing is, and what what Lemon never, so I saw this in clips and I finally had to go watch the whole fucking thing because you see it in like 60 second clips and it's a way longer interaction than the little hot clip. And the one thing I was looking for that I never saw was the definition between it is on your platform and it is promoted on your platform.
Right, right.
And all the shit that you don't like that could be considered hateful or aggressive or whatever. None of that is available for promotion, can be promotion. There's almost no views on it. Like, there's almost nothing. Honestly, it's kind of a self-filtering platform. People that just kind of go like, this is gross. I don't want to fucking, this shouldn't be around. just don't interact, or they report it, or they whatever. It's kind of a self-leveling thing. And Elon's whole argument is like, I provided a platform. I own a platform. He didn't provide it. He just renamed it, right? I own this platform that is, it's open to anybody. Now, you break the law. You put something on there that is illegal.
Yeah, we will remove it.
And we remove it.
Yeah.
And he's like, now, if they change the law, we will abide by the best law part, and we'll fucking change it.
The best
like,
part is, Don Lemon was talking about, I think he was talking about anti-Semitism. And he's like, you know, well, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And Elon's like, well, is it illegal? At first he's like, well, if it's illegal, we remove it. And Don kept going. And then Elon's like, well, was it illegal? And Don was like, no. And Elon goes, okay. Like,
yeah,
it's not illegal. You know, it's like, well, you know, it offends people, but it's like, it's not illegal.
Dude, some of the shit that he was doing there, and he was
that
like,
was great.
He was like, you just want censorship. And he's like, I don't want censorship. He's like, you want censorship. You want some censorship so bad you can fucking taste it. And he's like, just egging him on. And I'm like, God.
But now the other side of it, right? Because you can look at it and be like, well, Elon is being a dick. You know what I mean? So the ex-CNN, this is from an article on New York Post. Ex-CNN anchor sent over an astronomical wish list to Elon Musk during contract talks to host a show on the billionaire's social media platform X. Some of these some of his demands are including a free Tesla Cybertruck, a $5 million upfront payment on top of an $8 million salary, an equity stake in the multi-billion dollar company, and the right to approve any changes in X policy as it relates to news content. According to a document reviewed by the Post, Musk agreed to do the interview with Lemon despite the fact that he was aware of some of Lemon's outlandish demands. So, and they got done with the interview, and he's like, yeah, no, sorry, we're all set. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, but that deal structure, because I found this whole thing so interesting, because love him or hate him, Elon has been very vocal about the fact that he's like, freedom of speech is freedom of speech. It doesn't really come with like, it doesn't come with guardrails. It doesn't come with a safety net. It doesn't come with any of that. Now, if it's seditious and stuff like that, that's a different deal. But also sedition is illegal. Like there's.
I also appreciate that he is to a T, freedom of speech is freedom of speech in the United States of America.
And he's actually said like,
but
I don't necessarily like everything that is on that platform, but I can't.
If you go on X in Brazil, their terms of service and policies are
according to Brazilian law.
That's it. Yeah. So like if there's X in China, I don't know if there is or not, but if there is, it has to follow Chinese law.
Yeah.
They have their own. And we'll circle back to that. The whole, they'll have their own thing. Cause it back to the TikTok conversation, but
it's a Chinese knockoff.
One thing that I like about, we technically have the knockoff. But one thing I liked about what I found so interesting with the job request, I don't know how to put what Don Lemon wanted for X, because it was a request. It was a
contract negotiation.
It was a job request. It was literally like, you should hire me.
Yeah.
And here's what you're going to give me.
I will host a podcast on your platform solely. And this is what you'll give me to do it.
So
but what I found, but he was allowed to also like, essentially control what could be said, couldn't be said, the responses, like it was all of this kind of stuff. And it would be like me coming to you guys and going like, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to pay me this insane amount of money and you're going to own it and this platform that you've built, but I'm going to come in and I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to. And whatever you guys do that I don't like,
I'm going to tell you,
I'm going to tell you that you have to change it because I work for you.
Right.
And it was like, where did you get your pants made?
Yeah.
Because there's no fucking way your balls fit in like off the shelf shit. Like this all has to be custom, right?
No, they weren't his. He borrowed them from somebody else.
Oh, gotcha. But and that brings me to the TikTok thing is, look, I find TikTok very entertaining. There's like I said, it's great for pooping. This show doesn't do horrible on TikTok. It's done very well for our growth and stuff like that. It's a good tool.
Yeah.
But it is the knockoff of the Chinese version. Because China has, I don't know, have you ever looked into China's social media network?
Nope.
So China's social media network is literally, it's one piece. Like, it's not like we here we have it. It's broken into several. Yeah, I can't remember Facebook the name of it. And Instagram, producer's going to find
Twitter
it
Twitter and everything.
But they just have like this one platform and it's all on there. And it's where that weird short film that came out with people getting social rankings. And if your ranking wasn't high enough, like you were socially shunned and shit. That's what how China's works. And it's all on this singular platform, which is controlled by the government. And so it's China. There is no freedom of expression. You can't put anything that's, you know, seditious. You can't put anything that's anti-government. You can't. You know, all of the ads on there are all filtered and controlled and approved by the government, like everything. And it's their only platform. And
it's WeChat.
There you go.
Oh yeah.
And it's fucking wild. Yeah. Like, and it's this WeChat thing and they check in everywhere, but then you can go on and you can rate other people. And it's this whole like thumbs up, thumbs down kind of system on interactions that you've had with these people. And it socially ranks everybody. Huh. So they're putting even more social anxiety into this communist structure.
Can I, as an American, sign up for WeChat?
I'm sure they would love to have your data.
Yeah, but okay. What are they going to do with what's my data? What?
That has always been my argument. When these people tell me, they're like, I won't get an Alexa. They're listening to me. And I'm like, they're listening to you what? FAP in the morning? Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You're not important. Like, I'm not important.
Oh
my God.
Okay. I'm not important. Like, I have absolutely zero importance. I could disappear tomorrow. Four people care. Right? Like, it's 10 billion people on the planet. Four dudes care that I fucking am not here anymore.
But you know what I don't like?
And they're not even all in this
what
room.
What I don't like.
One of them is not here.
Well, what I don't like, though, is our government telling me as a goddamn grown-ass man that I can't be on TikTok. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, fuck off. Like, where do we draw the line? But that's like the Lemon. But it comes back to like Don Lemon's, hey, here's what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
And you're gonna pay me an insane amount of money to do it because I'm bad at interviewing.
So,
like, you already got fired from a job doing this. And now you want to get paid more money by a private dude to not be on TV to do it? I like John with the screen. Look at him being able to do homework over here.
I was looking up the Chinese social media, but I got Chinese social and then it came up with Chinese social credit system. So I went down a rabbit hole on this. So they call it the social credit system. It's a national credit rating and blacklist being developed by the Chinese government. The social credit initiative calls for the establishment of a record system so that businesses, individuals, and government institutions can be tracked and evaluated for trustworthiness. There are multiple forms of social credit system being experimented with, while the national regulatory method is based on whitelisting and blacklisting.
But it's I'm telling you right now, it's being alpha tested in WeChat.
Well, because so this has been going on since 1999.
Right, but you can rank people in this app. Like, so you have the social ranking that the people around you give you. And it's just like,
well, I do wish Facebook and Instagram had thumbs downs.
Yeah, I agree. Didn't it used to?
Well, I mean, it's like YouTube Reddit with an upvote and a downvote.
YouTube used to have an upvote and a downvote.
Oh, they still do.
Netflix, like and dislike.
Netflix used to.
So YouTube does have a thumb down, but now they don't show. Like YouTube, you used to be able to see how many people liked and disliked. Right.
I think the last one that really has that upvote downvote thing is Reddit.
100%.
I think Reddit's the last one, but fucking Reddit has always been the Wild West.
100%.
Those motherfuckers made Reddit and they were like, fucking have at it. Like you can put whatever the fuck you want on it.
The only downfall with Reddit, actually, we were talking about that earlier today.
The problem is that like I will look for something, right? Like I'll be like, want to ask the internet. Like,
yeah.
Hey, whatever. I search a topic and it's like, here's a Reddit article about it. It's like, okay, cool. And like, you get maybe two posts that's kind of helpful. And then it just devolves into what the fuck?
Just like, opinions on whatever topic.
But I will say, one of my favorite.
If you go more than four deep, though, you're getting some sort of white supremacist that's chimed in.
What is it called?
Instantaneously racist.
It's not like a group. It's like the r/. What is that?
That's a subreddit.
The subreddit, it's AITA. Am I the asshole?
Yeah.
If you're bored.
Oh, those are pretty good.
Go fucking read through some of those. Because
sometimes the poster is the asshole.
And 100%. But just reading these stories, If you want to feel good about yourself, go fucking read that subreddit.
There's some dude on that thing that has made his entire lifespan, and he's on almost every single one of the Am I the Asshole posts.
Yeah.
And his first post is like, if you have to ask, probably.
Yeah.
It's
dumb shit. Like, my boyfriend went to get a Coke and some chick said hi. And I was pissed off about it.
Am I the asshole? Yeah. Am I the asshole that I'm not okay with my roommate having people, you know, sleeping with people that are coming over because I'm the opposite sex? And it's like, yeah, he's not your boyfriend. He's your roommate. You're the asshole. Like, they're almost always. But I like that dude because almost every thread at some point in there, there's this guy that pops up that was like, if you have to ask, you're probably the asshole.
Yeah.
Now, good on you for the introspection. Like, if you're looking at yourself going like, wait a minute, am I the asshole in this situation?
My default is I am.
Yeah, I'm the asshole. Yeah,
I
want to see the.
I can't believe I couldn't think of this app.
I want the subreddit of him. Am I not the asshole?
Do you want to know what do you guys think the other app is that the U.S. government forced China to sell? Vine. There's an app. We've talked about it before.
Vine.
Grindr.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm not even surprised. I'm not even shocked.
Yep.
Give us money, Grindr. We can do this.
Oh, God. I wasn't here for that episode. Those clips. I totally agree. We can come up with better ads. Yeah. Them and Fleshlight. I think are our two. Yeah. That's our demographic.
I think it was 2016. So it wasn't that long ago. But yeah, they bought, what is it? They bought 60% of Grindr in 2016.
Well, I think I just saw an article and I think it's something like it's 470.
And they got bought out in 2019.
It's 470 plus apps that are on the current American app store that are owned by China.
Yeah. I mean,
they're owned by China and it's 470 plus apps that are owned by China. And then get into the other stuff. Bridges, roads, toll roads. They own most of the toll roads in the United States.
Well, yeah.
It's owned by China. Fund them? Huge amounts of farmland. Like we're worried about TikTok. I'm like, we're not worried that they own infrastructure in the US.
No.
TikTok could go away. Nothing really changes. Well, them deciding that you just can't use roads, shit changes.
So if the US government restricts improvement of infrastructure, they're not going to do it. The U.S. government isn't going to do it themselves. Look at the last bill that they passed, the infrastructure bill. What did it actually do?
It actually sent more money outside the country.
Yeah. We didn't fix shit in this country.
And that was one of the better bills that have been passed lately.
So now I would love to see a list of all the bridges owned by China so I don't drive over them. Because I know how well China makes a lot of their stuff. You know what I mean?
Fast.
It's fast, but it's not always good.
You just got to cross the bridge fast. The
momentum.
The less you use it, the lower the likelihood of it breaking. I'm just saying.
Be fast and light, not heavy and slow.
Also, I'm good, but you're fucked.
Well, I'll just drive faster.
So, anyways, you boys are about to leave. Back to homegrown American shit. Gosh. Americans selling South American shit.
So this will be our third Vegas trip this year in 3 months.
Yeah.
Right. So Mal's like, hey, I got invited to this engagement party. And I'm like, oh, cool. She's like, yeah, it's in Vegas. Memorial Day weekend. I'm like, have fun.
Yep.
And she's like, you don't want to go? And I'm like, no. Like, I've already been to Vegas 3 times this year. She's like, yeah, but this one will be fun. I'm like, no.
That's too many trips in 3 years.
Yeah.
Let alone in the first 3 months. Yeah, it's March.
I know.
So we're going to be in Vegas for what? 15 days out of the first 90 days of this year.
Yeah, fuck that. It's way too much.
Yeah, so, no, fuck.
Way too much.
Literally a third of this year. You spent a third of this year in Vegas. You guys are
gross.
You guys are those people. Don't touch me.
But I don't have to go for another 9 months, so
Successfully say this is. I went to SHOT Show this year and did not get to SHOT Show.
So either did I. No.
I've never asked this question. We've talked about you guys going to the trade show and stuff before, and you know how it went, and da 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 da. I think we can have this conversation. Not that we don't love you, Mikey, because we do, but I'm an ex-industry guy. You guys are in the industry and stuff like that. I always got excited about PCA to see what else was coming. I was always excited for the company. Yeah, I was going
absolutely.
For, but because I love the industry, I'm always excited about.
So I think there's a lot less new stuff this year because they upped it.
Yeah.
Well, that in
it's right behind another trade show. It's a weird time.
Most people can barely get a release out by July.
Yeah.
And so now last year, the trade show was July. This year, the trade show is March.
Yeah.
And so they're, you know, four months ahead.
And it's right on top of another trade.
Like we could have done, I'm sure there's some companies that do this. We could have done like, oh, we have a new product, a PCA exclusive.
Here's our release, but we're shipping it in 8 months.
Yeah. We're going to take pre-orders.
I think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a lot of like, we're expecting Q4 stuff.
Yeah.
So last year, though, there was
still shit that was released 2 years ago that hasn't even shipped from some companies.
Yeah.
There's shit that was released a couple years ago that companies are never going to see.
Yeah.
I'm not saying any names. last year, the one that fucking everybody talked about was the Fuente Patron.
Yeah, it's still collab. Not out. Still not out.
Now, apparently, only select retailers.
Well, that was always the case, I think.
No, the article just came out.
Okay.
Select retailers of the select retailers are now getting like the first box of this stuff that's coming. Yeah. And we're 9 months out. Like we're 9 months from the announcement.
A year and 9 months.
Hold on. Yeah. Here's the article.
Yeah, he found it.
For the retailers to get a chance to sell the Fuente y Padron Legends collaboration, it will likely be one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive, box of cigars they've ever sold. MSRP for this highly anticipated collaborative project from Arturo Fuente Padron is priced at $7,115 per box of 40 cigars.
I was going to say, it's 40 sticks. Yep.
The product was first announced in 2021. It comes to $178 a stick.
$178.
I'll never smoke one.
No.
I'll never smoke one. But I've smoked some insane shit.
There's a lot of products that those companies sell that aren't normal pricing in the cigar industry.
Yeah.
Well, almost everything from Padron that is not brown label Padron, if it says anniversary on it, it's not normal pricing in the cigar. Like those guys.
But it's not crazy either.
It's not crazy. It's very obtainable.
Yeah, a lot of the Fuente stuff's crazy.
The one thing I like about Padron versus Fuente in this scenario is that Padron is like, look, we make the 64, we make the 26, we make the birthday cigars, but they're available. Like you can go to almost every cigar shop.
Yeah.
You know, if they spent even a little bit of money with Padron, you could probably get it. You can buy it and it's going to cost you $20 and you're going to buy the cigar and you're going to smoke it. Fuente, on the other hand, is like, hey, we made the pink wrapped short story Eye of the Shark Tiger fucking barber pole blend cigar, and we only made 3.5 of them.
42 years ago.
And that all of that tobacco survived a fire.
As they're cranking out thousands of them daily, probably.
Yeah, and all of those survived a fire, and only these seven official retailers plus these 700 non-official retailers are going to get it, but you're only going to be able to get them on cigarbid.com.
No date has been given, it would appear the first shipment is very close to heading to stores.
Right.
The two companies intended to ship their first batch of 750 boxes to stores last December, but some of these, and this is like in different texts, some of these boxes were damaged in transit, so the first shipment was delayed.
They're both
in the process of receiving the initial shipments. Process has moved far enough along. The price has now been announced because it wasn't before. One of the last steps before the cigars begin shipping to retailers. While it's likely the first batch of Fuente Padron Legends will be on sale soon, retailers won't be able to place orders for the cigars.
Yep.
Shops can't order it. Legends box is expected to be allocated, meaning the two companies will offer a retailer a certain number of boxes or just a box, as opposed to letting the retailers decide how many boxes they would like to buy.
So for all of our listeners that follow these really hard to get cigars and you want to go find out what it is, you need to go look up who the PCA 100 is. And the PCA 100 are the top 100 cigar stores that are members of the PCA. And about half of those have been or are currently serving as board members on the PCA.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the shops that get it. I'm telling you right now. Best chance, and is probably smoking out of Florida. Best shot. Abe DeBedna's shot. I'm a huge fan of Warfighter, and we talk about it all the time, but Abe is a hell of a retailer.
Yeah.
He's an amazing and he's a great dude. Have you guys ever met Abe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
But fuck, man, he doesn't play when it comes to business. It's he's hard to do work with.
But this cigar, there's two cigars, right? It's yeah. not.
There, it's 20 cigars from
each Fuente company
and 20 cigars from Padron.
So you can't buy just one.
No. And it's going to be box sales only. These things will be complete. This yeah. reminds me of
14.
These are all going to be collector's items.
So have you ever seen?
They're not going to break them down and sell them. It's like those.
Did you ever see the La Flor Dominicana face-offs?
Yeah.
So it was a cigar that was blended for La Flor Dominicana, by another brand, and then La Flor Dominicana blended a cigar for them.
They switched them.
So it was blended by La Flor Dominicana, got the other guy's label, and then. That guy's label went on to Florida, and they sold. It's just that, it's that, but they're all in the same box.
But so this reminds me of like,
it's a big giant box. I don't know where you.
I had opportunity to get a box of 12 cigars, and it was one cigar for each year of the fucking whatever, and they were made specifically for the Chinese market, and somehow like 100 boxes. Ended up in the United States.
Of course.
Magic.
Right. And retail on those was $1,000 for 12 sticks.
From who?
Huh?
Who?
Anybody. Didn't matter where it's from.
No, who's the manufacturer?
I can't remember the name of the manufacturer right now off the top of my head. I want to say it was like EPC or something like that. It was a semi-common name. But I had an avenue to be able to get one. And I was like, I'm in. Let's do it. Because I was just going to sit on it for 10 years and then be like, oh, hey. You guys remember this? And, you know, I didn't end up getting it, but that was one of those boxes that there's 12 cigars in there. Yeah. You could sell each one for whatever, a 12th of a grand. But no retail shop is going to open that box and break it down.
Yeah.
No.
It's an all or nothing.
Well, it's like
a collector.
Every couple of years, Fuente will release that, that lineup box. That's got like all the Hemingways.
Right.
In one box. And so you get all the limited ones, plus you get the regular. So you get the Eye of the Shark, which I've never understood that name. Because it should be like this super oscuro where it's like pure black, but it's not. It just looks like another fucking Hemingway. But it's all the opuses. It's in that like that one fucking box. I feel like I'm just shitting on the cigar industry, but I've been in it long enough to fuck it. Problem I have with Opus, you can't smoke them when you buy them. They're like 2 years out from being good. Like every Opus you buy, you have to like bed down for 2 years and then you can smoke.
Well, speaking of that,
they're always like 2 years too young.
Well, and like, I feel like I can't keep up with the Opus names.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like I'm so lost.
It's the Opus year, the dragon bull shark fucking short story. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? Right. Like, what? I don't know what this is. I was so, like, what is it? It's an Opus.
Speaking of stuff you can't enjoy right away. So this past weekend, I went up to Fredericksburg and picked up some wine because I'm still a wine club member. I just haven't been up there to pick up wine. And
where are you putting all of this, by the way?
I got a wine rack.
Did you get those stacked?
Actually, I have two. Yeah, I got one of those. I have two wine racks. One of them's a 96 bottle and the other one's a 24 bottle. The 24 is full. The 96 is like 3/4 full.
I have another friend of mine that's a wine club member and literally came to me and was like, how much wine do you drink? And I was like, look, if it's in my house, it's getting drunk. And they were like, would you like some bottle? I'm literally have nowhere to put this. And I was like, fucking hey, dude, like I'll take it. But, and he brought me some and I was like, don't bring me any more of this. I don't.
So two, really bad. 2 years ago, I got invited to be a bougie member.
The black member?
No. Of their, they call it a KO member. Mm-hmm. And so with these
they
wines.
They got me too.
They're limited wines that they do.
Yeah.
And they're fucking delicious. They really are. But so you get 6 bottles a year, right? But when they bottle it, you have to age it for 5 years before, or 3 to 5 years before you drink it.
Right.
Right.
You have to be the seller.
I'm the wine seller.
You're the seller.
I went and picked up these 6 bottles, and I'm like, what happens if I drink it right now? And
they're the girl, it's trash.
She's like, you don't want to. And I'm like, well, why not? Like, and I told her, I was like, I have a cigar brand, so I understand the aging of a product to get the taste that's desired out of it. I was like, inform me on this. And so she went down the rabbit hole, and I'm like, oh, well, thank you. I get it now. And I was like, okay, do you have a list of everything else that you've made in years prior that's available? Because only these specific KO members can buy the previous bottles. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, those previous bottles are $100 a bottle.
So the winery I joined at what they call the black level. Yeah. So it's a KO Same level, thing. Whatever. So that unlocked all the Heath Vineyard stuff.
Okay.
Not the stuff I was buying from Fredericksburg. So this is Heath Vineyard stuff, which is all the stuff that's grown in Paso Robles. In, I guess, Paso. If you're in California and I'm saying it wrong. now, I like Paso wines. I like it because Paso is one of those ones with all the microclimates. And so, like, you can literally get a vineyard that's, like, 200 yards from one of the others. But the soil content is so different that the wine tastes different.
Yeah,
I like Paso wines. And all the wines, all the vines in Paso are from France. So they were clippings
the wines
from
or the vines.
The vines.
I thought you were having it.
The vines that make the wines are from France. So, but the vines are from France, and so when France had its big blight that killed all those vines, they went back to Paso and did clippings of those and put the. So these are all the Roman vines that got put in when Rome marched through. They planted all those mountains in France because it was like the center point for all the shit they're growing. And so I like them. They're big and they're
right.
They grow a great cab and they're huge and you feel it in the back of your jaw. It's those big flavored over the top fucking cabs, which is my wife and I like. So of course, when we go and we joined the vineyard, they were like, well, you've got to try these. So we joined and they had us do all the Heath ones. And it's the same thing. Once a year, you got half a case.
Yep.
So it was 6 bottles of that vineyard. And then they tell you, don't drink these for 3 years.
Yeah.
But as a Heath member, a black member, you can buy the prior years of doing them. Right. So if you want the ones that are already 3 years old, they're $100 a fucking bottle, which is what I was paying for my fucking, for my shit that I can't drink for 3 fucking years. And I was
I pay less for the shit that I have to age because I was about to have an issue with them. Cause that is the same thing. Like, why am I paying full price and I'm fucking aging this?
No, mine was better because I joined the black thing and then found out that I didn't get the pickup other than the black one. All it allowed me to do was buy the quarterly pickup if I wanted it the rest of the year for the standard line shit. The only thing I was paying for was for my 6 bottles, and it was like $700 a year for my 6 bottles that I picked up that I couldn't drink for 3 fucking years. Like, I was like,
mine's
I'm done.
$450, I think, and for the 6 bottles. And then I have the quarterly ones that I get that's – Yeah, she, top of that.
I didn't get that. Apparently, I need to go talk to yours because mine was like, no, it was $680.
Yeah.
I only got my 6 bottles, but I could go do the club pickup if I paid for the case once a quarter if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I was like, bro, so I'm supposed to be into you for like $3,000 a year?
Yeah.
I'm like, Total Wine's 4 miles away.
They have way more selection.
They got way more selection. And if I walk in and tell the fucking Psalm at Total Wine that, hey, I've got $1,000 I want to spend on Paso wines.
Yeah.
I'm leaving with way more than 6 bottles.
So I ended up leaving with like 24 bottles of wine. It's like, Jesus Christ, again.
You don't even drink that much wine.
I do. Well, see, here's my thing with wine, right? It's kind of like how I drink whiskey, where
often.
Not often, but a good amount of quantity when I do.
Yeah, so that was our problem.
Right, so when I open a bottle of wine, it's not just a bottle of wine.
No,
it's like 3 or 4.
Yeah, you know? That was our problem. My wife and I, like, we'd go and, you know, we'd have this black label stuff, and then we'd pick up the fucking case or whatever of the other release. And it was like, we'd open one, and we'd drink it, because it's 2 glasses.
Yeah.
Like, you open a bottle each. And
4 glasses.
I'm married, right? So that means I got 2 glasses of wine.
Okay.
Because she drank 2, I drank 2. Yeah, like, yeah, I got 2 glasses of wine. So, well, it's like, I practice enough at this. The 2 glasses didn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
That was just, it's
And then
good.
By the time you get, like, you pop that third bottle, And then you're like, oh, this is so good.
Yeah.
Because the first two bottles are starting to kick. And by the time the third's done, it doesn't even matter anymore. Well, like, fuck, we'll open six more. Yeah.
And it was always with dinner, right? So it was like we made steak and did appetizers and like the whole nine yards. Well, the first bottle that got opened, the two glasses that I had, got me through dinner. That was just the drink with dinner.
Yep.
And it's like, well, now it's after dinner.
Yeah.
I'm going to light a cigar. I'm going to do this, that, and the other. Three bottles fucking later. And it's like, fuck, did I spend $400 on wine last night? Like, this is insane.
Yeah,
I'm not into wine. That's why.
And
I like
wine. No, there's cheap wines that are phenomenal. Yeah.
They're
$15 a bottle.
Yeah. There really is.
You can drink.
Like, one of my favorite wineries that I absolutely love, they have their not good enough wine to wear the big label. Yeah. And you can buy it for like $16. Yeah. It's like $16 a bottle. And it's phenomenal.
There's a brand called Hess, H-E-S-S.
Yep.
And it's like between 12 and 15 a bottle, depending on which one it is.
And I tell everybody to buy Decoy.
And if you take that bottle of Hess and you're hosting a dinner party and it's like bougie as fuck. And you decant it and you pour it for everyone. They're going to think you just cracked open a $100 bottle of
wine. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And it's just, it's consistent. It's good.
Like I'll probably have like. The most of the time when I have wine is when we're in Vegas and
Craig
orders wine. Right? I like wine.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about wine to go buy.
And it's a fucking rabbit hole.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'll never get into. I'm pushing it down the road.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
I got into wine at an early age because of bartending.
Yeah.
Because we had wines and that cultivated my wine knowledge because I didn't know shit. Yeah. Like I knew like the little mini bottles that of wine you get that are like $3, the Woodford Reserve or Woodbridge or whatever the fuck they're called. What are they called?
Woodbridge. Yeah.
Those little bottles, like that's what I knew.
Yeah,
like you want a Pinot, you want a Cab.
The
like,
Sutter Homes.
I slapped a bag this last weekend and had a little wine.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Yeah.
So, but then I started working at this bar in Massachusetts and so every single week, because I was one of the head bartenders, we had to do tastings with all of our distributors, with all the new shit. Yeah. What do we want to bring in? What limited run stuff, blah, blah, blah. And so once we got, I mean, there's only so much booze that you do, but there's a million fucking wines.
And there is nothing like a wine rep. They have this bag that they show up.
Oh, my God.
So it's this bag. And it looks, you know, those Yeti cooler bags that are like $8 bajillion Somehow I own one that just has my dog's shit in it. And I'm like, why do I have a Yeti cooler bag that carries around dog toys?
The same reason why you have the things happen in my life for Kira. Yeah,
I was like, how the fuck? Because those things are not cheap. Yeah. Like those, anyways, it looks like one of those, but inside it's divided up like it's got all the slots in it. Like if you've ever bought a case of booze and it's got the cardboard divider in it, it's that, but it's made out of like cooler material.
Yeah.
And a wine rep will show up. It's almost always a chick, and they show up in this like pencil skirt thing and a blouse, and then they set this bag down, and then they will line up like 8 or 9 wines, and you're just looking at it going like, it's 11:30 in the morning.
You
know what? I might not drink a lot of wine, but goddamn it, I'll buy wine.
When they do one of these tasting things, especially for bars, the goal isn't to drink all of the wine.
Right.
They put a spit bucket on every table and you're supposed to taste it and spit it out and then go to the next one.
Nobody does that.
Right. It took me 6 weeks of doing this. The first 6 times, once a week that we did this, finally the owner was like, John, listen, you got to stop getting fucking hammered at these tastings. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? He goes, you're not supposed to drink it. I'm like, what? How do you taste it? He goes, you swish it on your mouth, you spit it in that bucket. I'm like, oh, that's what the bucket's for. Yeah, I thought it was an ice bucket. They just never filled it.
Did you ever notice though that the reps never do it?
Oh,
the reps never spit anything out. I'm like, how the fuck are you?
But they also only take a sip and then they fill, you know, they give you a quarter glass.
Yeah, they give you like a quarter pour. And so, but wine reps are the fucking best.
I like, if I could order a flight of wine, I would do that.
So the thing I tell everybody with wine is you need to find mid-grade wine and you need to get different styles.
Yeah.
So you need to get a Merlot, a Malbec, a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Sauvignon Blanc. Like you need to get the different styles and get mid-grade wines. Don't go buy $50 wines, but don't buy fucking Well, now it's $4 Chuck. It's not, it used to be $2 Chuck. Oh, yeah.
$2 Chuck was my jam.
Trader Joe's, baby. You can still buy it. I'm a big fan. Actually, my favorite table wine is from a company called Bogle. If you want to spend like very little money, yeah, but get a wine that actually tastes good, there's a company called Bogle, B-O-G-L-E. I think it's like $11 nice for a bottle of their cab. And it's solid. As a table wine, I don't have to think about it. It's just good wine. It's solid. But find a mid-grade wine and go through the different styles, the major styles. Don't get off into the fucking variants because you'll get so far down this rabbit hole.
That's all I have is the variant.
It's all the variant wines. Find a style you like.
Right.
And then start working regions. Yeah. So like try it from Chile, try it from like, and then you will find a wine and a region you like, and you've kind of zeroed it in. Like I know I like Nicaraguan tobacco.
Yeah.
I like, especially in my wrappers, I like Nicaraguan wrappers. I don't mind Dominican fillers. I think they do a good job of balancing it. But I know, like, if you show me a cigar that's either Nicaraguan Puro or it's Nicaraguan wrapped in like Nicaraguan, Honduran, Dominican filled,
probably gonna like.
I'm probably gonna be there if it's in the that wrapper's in the style in the region that I like.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, my favorite cigar from you guys, the Laranja Orange Label, is like there's certain cigars, and really, if you smoked through them and you kind of didn't know the nuances of those cigars, you'd be like, this is the same cigar with four wrappers on it. And it's like, it's not, but
yeah,
I know my style. Like I know what I like.
Right.
Wines are kind of the same way for me. I know I like French Bordeaux's and I like Paso Robles Cabernet Sauvignon. Both of those wines are huge. They are giant flavor, like grab you by the back of the jaw, kind of shake you around. Massive flavors, but I also like a spicier cigar. I like, you know, and so I need a bigger flavor.
Well, I know if I dove into wines, I would be into.
But like, I can't do sweet wines. Those wines it's the far sweeter like fruit juice. Yeah.
I can do.
I don't want that. I want the earth and the tannins and the leather and like I want a wine that drinks like a cigar smokes.
Right.
And so, but I found that wine.
I can do certain sweet ones. Right. Yeah. Like you were saying about regions.
Yeah.
An ice wine from the Mosel River Valley in Germany, I'll drink the fuck out of that.
The only time I will drink it is between like November 1st.
That's it.
And like December 31st. Like as a meal, Christmas wine, I like it.
There's a meal and a time.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But ice wines behind pork.
Oh.
So fucking good.
But and one of the reasons why I like that specific area is because I don't really like this aspect of it, but it adds to the quality control of it. The German government actually goes in after the first freeze to test the grapes to make sure
that. But they do that with all the German purity laws too for beer.
They do. But if the government decide, if they walk onto a random farm in the valley and they pick a grape and it's not to their standard, nobody in the valley can do it. So if everyone's growing these grapes and the government says, hey, we're not good, they can still produce, they can't sell.
Mm. Although I think like the Rhine Valley hasn't missed in like centuries.
Yep.
So most of the ice wine you'll go find, it's going to be a Rhine Valley and they're good. They're really good.
It's a dessert wine.
You're going to have it after dinner.
Yeah.
But that's what it's designed for. Like literally they were like, cause after dinner, it's this sweet wine and they serve it in smaller glasses and stuff like that. But yeah, if you're going to get into wine, you almost need to, it's almost like walking in artillery. You need to like, like call a grid and then go like, okay, now we're going to go like kind of walk it. And it's like nailed it. Like, but you kind of have to pay attention. You can't just go pick random wines. Right. You'll never find one that works for you. And then just have that combo. Like I like, so there's the 42nd parallel. Wines grown above the 42nd parallel. That's where I prefer them to come from. I like them with a heavy mineral content in the soil because that provides all of that, that more earthy flavor in the wine. Less fruit, you get more earthy tones. Yeah. But I dialed all that in and that came from years of just like, this is shit, this is good, this is, And then I have to get into South America. So you almost have to flip the map and get the same thing on the back end of that. But then I change styles. So South American wine, I prefer to get into Malbecs and stuff like that because they're bigger.
But it's also like cigars where your palate evolves.
Yeah.
So like there is this wine, Justin Cab. It's a vineyard called Justin. They're out of Napa Valley and they made a cab.
It's an insanely simple label. It is white and in cursive on the front. It just says Justin on the front of it.
And when I started drinking it, there was a black label and Justin was in red.
Yeah.
And then on the bottom it said Cabernet Sauvignon. Yep. That was it. And that with a steak, fucking next level. But just like tobacco, every year, every crop changes.
Yeah.
You got to learn the years.
And I had a glass of Justin Cab, I think last year when I was in Arizona. And I drank like half of it. And I was just like,
it's not there.
I don't know if it was me or if it's them.
Yeah.
But it's not what it was. I will warn you, it gets very rabbit holey.
But and then,
so every, then you I know, start paying attention.
I know
to stuff,
that's why
like,
that's
every,
why
every year's on. Crop's different. Like, so the vineyard I belong to, the wine club I belong to in Fredericksburg, their vineyard every year, they make the same wines, but it's a different crop.
Yeah.
And it tastes
everything
like,
changes.
There's some that like I have a 2020 and it's phenomenal. And I have a 2021 and it is trash.
Yeah.
And the 2022 is great again.
Yeah. And I hate to tell you this, like his 2021, right? He said it's trash. He could go like, I'm going to take my other bottles and I'm going to bed them down for 5 years. They're not getting any better. It's just what they're going to taste like.
It is what it is.
The wine is good when it goes in the bottle or it's not. Yeah. And that's it.
Well, I don't know how you would age anything in glass. Like,
you can't.
It makes no sense.
You can't. It doesn't do anything. The only thing that'll do, if you're storing it properly,
out the flavors.
It calms down a little bit. What it does is it marries a bit more.
Yeah.
If you're storing them properly, I know exactly what racks you're talking about. So you're actually corked down. Yeah. They don't sit flat. Yep. They're corked down. It lets that shit kind of settle out. And then if you don't, if you're not rough with it when you pick it up and you kind of slide it out, you can let the bullshit in it will go to the bottom and then you decant it.
Yeah.
So when you decant it, you don't pour the whole bottle. So you're pouring the good wine into a decanter. The trash stays in the bottom. But you kind of can't make a bad wine good. It doesn't happen. Unlike where vodka, where you can like run it through a Brita and all of a sudden your vodka is the like, smoothest thing delicious. You've ever fucking had.
You should try that with some trash wine. See what happens.
It you get water. Like you get it's you pull everything out.
Yeah.
One of my favorite vineyards is Camus Vineyards, Caymus, Camus Vineyards. The Camus is awesome. Camus white label, it's gonna run you retail $60-$70 a bottle.
Yeah.
But Camus also makes Duckhorn, which is gonna get you in the $40 range. But then Duckhorn makes Decoy, which is gonna be in like the $17-$18 range. I'm gonna tell you right now, until you get a really educated palate, I can pour you a glass of Camus and I can pour you a glass of Duckhorn or a Decoy. You're not gonna be able to tell me the fucking difference between those two Cabernets. And so that's why I'm like, find the mid-grade stuff. And then if you just want a wine that's good, that, you know, has a different flavor profile than drinking whiskey or whatever all the time, you can find that equivalent to Decoy
for about every You know what? Fuck this. I feel like we should have done a wine episode.
Do we have any?
We have one bottle.
Where is it?
How about I'll bring in some wine. I have.
Oh, it's
couple,
back there.
I have a couple bottles.
Second shelf, all the way in the back.
I have a couple bottles of wine. We'll wait till Mikey's back and we'll do a wine episode.
What is that?
I don't know.
No, I know what that is.
Oh,
nope.
No. Nope.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
I will bring a bottle or we'll wait for some of his club stuff or whatever. Well, we'll do a wine episode.
All right.
Yeah, we're not drinking that. I know what that is and no.
We will open that on the wine episode.
Okay.
Yep. You can compare it to other wines.
All right. Well, I think we should. We've never done that.
On that wine episode, like I want to go get a bottle of Two-Buck Chuck. Or Four-Buck Chuck. Whatever it's called now. It was Two-Buck Chuck when I started drinking.
Still not bad.
Now, here's Two-Buck Chuck is Trader Joe's wine brand.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know, is Charles, whatever the fuck, I can't remember.
Yeah, the label does not say Two-Buck Chuck. No. It says Charles something. But
you only get it at Trader Joe's.
Forever.
Yeah.
It was $2. You used to be able to get it everywhere. Now you can only get it at Trader Joe's. But it was $1.99 a bottle.
Yep. And what they did is they got all the bottom of the barrels of all the barrels in Napa. So when they dump the barrels, they only use so much of it. They used to keep all the shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so they took all that, they filtered it out, blended it all together, and bottled it. And it was $2.
Okay.
That was it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's just like, yeah, it's $2 Chuck.
Yeah.
And people would buy the fucking shit out of it. And it wasn't horrible because it all came from good wines.
Right, right.
But you just didn't know what the fuck you were getting because it was just a mix of everything. But it was really good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say really good. For $2, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Is it Charles Shaw?
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, now it's $4. I mean, it Bidenomics, right?
Right.
But it's still like 100% worth it. And that's one of the ones, if you decanter it and you don't tell anybody what it is and you're just pouring it with a dinner, nobody's going to say
that's the thing is that
word.
I think, because it's Charles Shaw or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think I literally think they took all the Napa runoffs and it's still stylized. So you can still buy $2 Chuck in all of the different styles of wine. It's not just like red blend, white blend or whatever. Like it is still all the different styles. I'm utterly convinced that they went and they pulled all those Napa wines and they take the barrel and they pour it through like a cheesecloth to pull the sediment out.
All the
and
bullshit.
They just put it in a.
They just and they mix it all. Okay, you got any leftovers? You got leftovers too? Cool. I'll take all of them.
And so it's just Charles Shaw Cabernet. And so, but you know, Napa makes a great wine. And so all of a sudden you have this blended wine that
encapsulates all the goodness.
But it's not horrible. It's not winning awards.
Right.
But it was $2. And when it was like,
it's like the dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like, it tastes good as a table wine, or I'm sitting here fucking watching fucking NCIS for the 17th time through. And I just want a glass of wine. Do I really need to open $40 wine to do that? Or do I need a $2 bottle?
NCIS is a great show to listen to.
It's the best background noise you could possibly have.
Well, because you don't have to pay attention to any of it.
No.
Yeah. And there's
all the same episode.
What, 25 seasons or some shit?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's been on longer than The Simpsons.
You could literally spend the next 30 years banging to NCIS every single night and not rewatch or re-listen to the same episode.
That's a weird flex.
You just change cities.
No, I was going to say.
No, like, just the
I could bang several times NCIS. In one episode, so it's like.
Well, no, as soon as you get done, you turn it, you watch something else.
I'm not going to lie.
You just pick it up next time.
I've tried to watch NCIS from the other
side. It took me 3.5 months. I got through the first episode.
And there's no Leroy Gibbs, so I don't care.
You're watching the wrong show.
NCIS?
Yeah, just the main NCIS.
It has Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've tried to watch the other cities. They did like NCIS Miami and NCIS New Orleans and NCIS LA.
If Ducky's not in it, I'm not watching it.
And I'm not watching it. But
so they have 20 seasons, 461 episodes.
Yeah. Wow. And they're an hour long apiece.
Yeah.
But that's what $2
Chuck. A lot of crimes in the military.
Well, if you do
it, that's just the Navy.
True. And those guys are pretty innocent.
Okay.
But so we'll do a wine episode. Oh. So here's the challenge.
I feel like we should.
I'll put the challenge in for the wine episode. Each one of us will bring a bottle.
Okay.
Because you and I are into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll pick bottles and then the other two can go pick whatever.
Just off the shelf.
Yeah. Just you go look.
I have no idea.
Buy it on the label. Just look at it and be like,
that's cool.
I think this looks cool.
All right.
And we'll do the comparison.
Now, Craig's giving you solid advice on choosing wine.
Based on the APV.
That's it. The alcohol percentage. Yeah. Right. So what did he tell you? Do you remember?
Above 13%, I believe. And he said it's usually pretty good.
So if you're going blind.
Yeah.
And you sit down at a restaurant and you want to get wine and impress your lady. And you have no idea what you're doing. Most wine lists in a restaurant are going to have the alcohol percentage of the wine listed with it.
I think that's a law.
And if you pick ones, whether it's red or white, that's over 13%, preferably in the 14s.
Okay.
You are not going to be disappointed.
So this is 13.5 and you guys all motherfucked it.
Yeah, that's because we.
Well, I know what it is.
They won't have that in a restaurant.
I don't even know who brought this. I can't remember.
But
this it translates into hopefully.
Yeah. So it's hopefully good.
I guess.
So one of the things that I've noticed when it comes to wine, and you call me superficial, whatever you want. If it doesn't have a cork, I'm usually not going to buy it.
All right.
If it's a screw top, Now, I don't care what the percentage is.
I feel like just to fuck with my mother, I would bring in Mogan David because that's what she drinks. Because
the church wine?
It's communion wine.
It's church wine. Yeah.
I mean, I could bring in some Manischewitz if you want.
Now, I want to know how Mogan David.
That's a hell of a pitch. Got every fucking church on the planet to buy their shit. Yeah.
Like, that's a hell of a pitch.
There has to be like a Uline catalog for churches, right?
The next time I
it's not called Uline, it's called the cross.
The next time I talk to pastor, I'm gonna be like, hey, just from a have a business conversation.
What's the
why
supply catalog that you guys get?
Do you think it's like set up like a franchise where you just have one menu to order off of and that's all you get?
Yeah, 100%.
Like they're like, we're a church of blah blah blah. Like, okay, cool. Here,
maybe
that's all you can order.
Maybe Mogan David donates it. I don't know.
No way.
It can't be.
No, because that's solely how they make their money.
Yeah. No, because Mogan David is also MD 2020.
That's true, but not very profitable these days.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I tried one not long ago. Not good.
No, that's because
your palate's evolved.
The 40 plus crowd doesn't buy MD 2020.
But we're the ones that started it.
But no,
we are not.
When did MD 2020 come out?
I'm looking it up.
I bet it was when I was about a fucking sophomore.
Everybody in this room, except for maybe him, has the MD 2020 hangover story.
Oh, God.
And there was the night with MD 2020 where the next day somebody had a bottle of it and it instantly changed the color of your skin.
Yeah.
You were just like, everybody has that story. Because unless you were young and dumb enough to buy that shit, you don't. But so my buddy bought me tickets to the Dead South, and it was at the Aztec. Well, the Aztec has a convenience store on the corner of it because it's downtown.
Yeah.
And we were standing in line with my friend. I looked through the window, and they've got an MD 2020 rack. It's a display, had the sign on top of it, and all those fucking square bottles just lined up. And I was like, oh God, I'm getting nauseous just looking at that. And the four pack that was behind us, that was roughly our age, looked in the window and went, oh, I could taste the tropical fruit punch. Yeah. And I was like,
when did it come out?
So I'm trying to find exactly when Mad Dog 2020 came out.
But that's, that's only a nickname we gave it. That's not actually not the real name. MD20M/D 2020. It's Mogan Davis.
Yeah.
This is a communion wine.
My wife blew my mind when I found that out. Yeah.
Launched in 1984, the MD 2020 portfolio included an array of flavors.
Literally 40 years old.
Yeah. Fuck. 84. I was young too.
I was two.
It's 40 years old this year.
So this is what I was laughing at earlier. MD 2020, often called by his nickname Mad Dog, is an American fortified wine. The MD stands for its producer, Mogan David. 2020 has alcohol content that varies by flavor from 13 to 18%. Initially, 2020 stood for 20 ounces at 20% alcohol. Currently, MD 2020 is sold neither in 20-ounce bottles nor at 20% alcohol by volume. In the central belt of Scotland, it is a very popular beverage, usually drunk from the bottle and often associated with antisocial behavior.
Well, can confirm.
I don't think I've ever had it from a glass.
Fuck no.
Yeah.
Why would you dump it in a glass? What a waste of time.
The people that drink Mad Dog 2020, like on the regular, don't do their own dishes.
Nobody drinks it on the regular today.
They don't. They use... they use fucking solo cups and paper plates.
Anybody drinking Mad Dog 2020 regularly?
They drink it out of the bottle and they smash it against the wall when they're done.
Like 100%, but you can't do the same. You don't get the same effect with a solo cup.
You said don't do their dishes. And
they don't.
My argument is they don't own dishes.
Yeah, I mean, they use solo cups and paper plates.
Yeah.
They don't have those either. From the bottle.
Yeah. You don't need a plate for a Hot Pocket.
No, it comes with its own thing.
No, Jazz, you were talking about me maybe not drinking Mad Dog. I was part of the Four Loko generation.
Yeah, because that's what I need.
Have you ever had Mad Dog?
Yes. 2020? Yeah, Mikey gave it to me.
Okay, I was going to say, if you haven't, when we do our wine night, we're bringing you Mad Dog 2020.
Mikey giving it to you seems appropriate.
100%, The same guy that brought in a fucking... Oh, what is that? What's the... Oh, Rumplemintz. That's what he brought in that one time.
Yeah. Yeah. Used to drink that in high school too. There's Boone's a reason Farm. I left it in high school though.
Boone's Farm.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah.
So I drank $4. I drank more Boone's Farm than I drank Mad Dog 2020.
Yeah, it was better.
Well, it was roughly the same price.
It was better though.
But yeah. You can mix it.
I never did.
Like so the first time I ever got drunk was off of Boone's Farm strawberry schnapps or whatever their strawberry fucking,
strawberry
whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then like I didn't really understand what I did. Right, because it was the first time. So I'm like, oh, that was weird. I felt
you had that shit now. And mixed it with what?
No, that was it was just
Boone Farm strawberry.
Yeah.
But it was easy to get. Mm-hmm. And then the first time because, I really got
that's because every place that sells Boone's Farm also doesn't card.
No,
and Boone's Farm is cheap. That's why it was easy.
So I remember in high school, there was a gas station. We all knew what gas station it was. And I don't know how every high schooler knew what gas station it was and the cops still didn't shut them down.
Right.
These motherfuckers didn't card for anything.
No.
So you could walk up. And I remember in high school, every Friday, I would get out of school. I would drive there and I'd buy two fucking bottles of MD 2020 and a fucking and three packs of Camel Wides.
Yeah.
And I never once got carded. And look, if I shave, I look 17 now.
Right.
Like, so at the time, it was what the fuck? And yeah.
I got to go back to, what did you mix fucking Boone's Farm?
No, that wasn't Boone's Farm. I got confused.
Okay. Because that was like.
The only thing you mix Boone's Farm with is vodka, and then you're just a degenerate.
Yeah, because that's twice.
But.
You're Northern Canadian at that
point. My actual first time getting drunk. Like, not just like buzzed up Boone's Farm, like drunk. It was peach schnapps and Mountain Dew.
Oh, that's funny.
It was horrible. I mean, at the time, it tasted.
My wrong. First time getting drunk was just peach schnapps.
Yeah.
First time,
it's because it's what your parents had.
No, me and my buddy.
Out of all the shit at liquor store, you bought peach
first schnapps. First time peach I ever schnapps. Got drunk was I stole a hammered. Bottle of fucking Galliano.
Oh,
yeah. And Jesus.
Me and my buddy Paul. He was a senior. I was a freshman. We finished off a handle of peach schnapps.
God.
And my mom had gone drunk.
Fucking pre-diabetic.
My mom had gone home from the bar that night drunk. And the bar had closed down. So it was like 2 a.m. I'm in this little hometown, right? And I had to call my mom. The bar owner chick was like, oh, you need help. I'm like, yeah. She's like, use my phone. So I call my mom and my mom's like, I'm too drunk to get you. And I'm like, well, I can't fucking get home. So I don't know what you can do. So she drove home. She drove back to get me, which was like 7 miles. It wasn't very far in the country. So like there's no population.
It's just dirt. Yeah. Dirt roads or county roads.
Yeah. And she wants me to drive home. And I'm like, and she didn't know I was drunk. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't drive home. Like, I fucking can't drive home. I don't remember who drove home that night.
Well, we made it.
But we made it. And holy fuck. But yeah, me and Mr. Paul, who, God, he passed away early, young of cancer.
Oh.
I miss Paul. Great dude. But yeah, he was a good guy. And senior when I was a freshman. And
yeah.
We finished off that bottle of that handle of peach schnapps.
Damn.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. Mine was a stolen bottle of Galliano, whatever.
What's Galliano?
It's the main ingredient in a Harvey Wallbanger. And since this isn't 1987, nobody drinks those anymore.
I've heard
like, of it. Here's the thing.
You want to piss off a bartender? Go to a bar and order that. And Galliano, so Galliano is in a bottle about this.
But what is
it's tall and skinny.
And it's tall and skinny. It's shaped like a pyramid.
What is it though?
It's an Italian liqueur.
Yeah.
It's not even like schnapps where you go like, oh, it's this. It's just an Italian liqueur.
Okay.
But there is a cocktail called a Harvey Wallbanger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like 9 ingredients in this fucking cocktail. It's a fucking nightmare. You want to piss off a bartender? Go to a bar that has Galliano in it. Let me get a Harvey Wallbanger.
Well, so Galliano is a sweet herbal liqueur is what.
Yeah. It's an Italian.
It's like liqueur. A vanilla flavored liqueur. So every bar I've ever worked in has one bottle of Galliano.
And it's been there since they opened.
Now, here's the crazy part. It's never full.
But it's never empty either.
Never empty, never full. I bartended for 10 years. I've never touched a bottle of Galliano. Not once, not for any drink, not for anything. I've had one person that came in and said, I'd like a Galliano on the rocks. And I looked at the dude and I was like, stop ordering what your grandfather drinks. I'm going to pour you a drink. And the guy's like, what? And I'm like, you must have turned 21 like 2 weeks ago. And he's like, well, like three. And I'm
have
like,
you, yeah. Have you seen that TikToker that's obviously been a bartender?
Which one?
So there's this TikToker and he comes in and he plays all the characters that are ordering drinks and he plays the bartender. So it'll be like, next.
Yep.
And he looks at him and they're like, yeah, can I get three? Can I get one green tea shot? And he's like, you want one? He's like, yeah, that and a Miller Lite. And he's like, you only want one shot? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, so you want one green tea shot? And he's like, oh, I'll take three of those. And he's like, there's my boy. And then he's like, next. And he's like, because no, right, there's certain right. things that every bartender's like, I'm not making one green tea
right,
shot. Yeah. Like, you want to order four? Okay. Ooh, whatever.
Right.
Or it's like, last call. It's like, can I get a fucking
Long Island?
An espresso martini? And he's yeah. like, no. No.
Sorry.
But all of his shit is just like, do you remember us? We talked to you for like 15 minutes, 3 weeks. And he's like, no. I don't remember 15 minutes ago. Next. And he's just like, and I'm like, wow, you've been behind a bar a long time. It like,
we almost did that with the gun shop.
Oh,
where we played ourselves and then the
and customers. Then the gun store customers. We should still do that.
Yeah, we should.
That would be good funny.
Holy fuck. You should do it. And just let me be every customer.
What we need to do is get like Capital Armory involved and be like, just let us be the customers and you film.
Oh,
like we'll be the customer and you react to us.
That would be
fucking legit.
We should do it for Warfighter and I'll just be every cigar customer and you guys just be the cigar owner and I'll just come in and ask shit. And
it's just the emails. We can do a whole fucking hour long on just the random.
I worked retail tobacco before I went to the manufacturer.
I was going to say we could do it from a shop owner standpoint. Based on the question.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
and
we don't get a lot of.
I worked retail tobacco and the shit that people ask you is like to.
Or you be the shop owner, we'll be the customer.
There you go. There you go.
Yep.
Yeah,
and that way it doesn't make us look bad as owners,
right?
Yeah, I don't know shit. They're like, I'm fucking, and I'm sorry, but you're.
I was just asking questions. This asshole. Yeah.
He's
the cocksucker.
Your man. Average cigar shop customer is a fucking idiot. I'm sorry, but you guys are. You are.
But you could say that about any industry.
Any industry.
No, I know. Because I'm in the game industry, and the people that come in and ask me, like, well, you know, in 6th edition, I'm like, well, we're in 10th edition. But it was, you're asking me about stuff from 15 years ago. Like, there's not relevant. Well, I remember when that.
Well, back in my day.
Fine. Yeah. It's like,
like, the best is when we were at a gun show selling suppressors, and one guy's like telling his kid or something, like, oh, those are illegal.
We had a cop walk into the gun store.
Yeah.
I was working. I think you were there. We had an on duty in uniform cop walk into the gun store. And right when you walk in, we had a glass display with all the fucking suppressor silencers that we had on display, one of each. Then there's probably 50 fucking cans.
Yeah, we had 50 suppressors on display.
Right. So this guy walks in and he's like, what are those? And I'm like, oh, they're silencers. Like, we're called Silencer Headquarters. This is what we do.
It's crazy. It's on the sign outside.
And the cop, he's like, well, you can't sell those. Those are illegal. And I'm like, whoa, that's $250,000 in inventory. It must be illegal too. Like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Like, arrest me.
Yeah.
Please.
You fucking caught us.
You got me.
I have this giant store selling all this illegal shit. It's fucking wild, man.
Your bosses are going to promote the fuck out of you.
Holy shit. So we're shitting on stuff. We're shitting on stuff, but I have to bring this up because Caitlin and I saw this in the parking lot of our store. And so we parked, we rode the bikes to the store, we parked the bikes, and there's a Miata. Like, there's a hill that goes up outside of my store. And there's a Miata parked there. And there's this dad. And quintessential dad. I mean, like
New Balance shoes.
Yeah. It's like jean shorts, golf shirt, New Balance shoes, hat, sunglasses and stuff. Top down on the Miata with the roll cage pointing uphill, right? And you've got had to be a 16-year-old kid with the neck beard cuz high schools don't require you to shave anymore. So every kid's like, "I know how to grow a beard." And I'm like, "You're supposed to shave part of that, bud." But
yeah, you do.
Whatever, you do you in the driver's seat. And this dad has him holding the car on the hill and then moving it 15 feet forward and
coming into a stop on the hill.
Is it manual?
It's a manual Miata.
Nice.
15 feet up, holding it.
I appreciate
15
that.
Feet up, yeah. Holding it. 15 feet up, comes to the stop sign, makes him come around. And they're just doing laps. And we get off the bikes and stuff. And he comes, they're drifting. He's just like coasting it down the hill. And he comes by and I was like, you look good, bud. You're doing fucking great. And he did. Like, yeah. There was no clicks, no grind. Like, he was looking great. And he was like, somebody's got to teach him to shift manual. I was like, fucking absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
So fucking more. And it was a full, you could tell this dude was going and doing the, what's the fucking motorsport? And they do it on the parking lots. The autocross? Oh, the autocross shit. Yeah. It was an autocross Miata.
Nice. Okay.
And you could tell just by the way it was stanced out, the full roll cage.
Yeah.
Like you could tell it was on suspension. It didn't sound stock. Like it was like you bought a $2,500 Miata and you put fucking 10 grand into this fucking thing. And this is your cool little sport thing.
Yeah.
But it's the only manual you have.
Right.
And God damn it, your boy was going to know how to drive fucking stick. Right.
I appreciate the fuck out of
it. And so you put this kid in a fucking race car and was like, you're going to learn it. Cause if you can shift this,
you shift anything.
You can shift fucking anything. And the kid was nailing it. And we were out there just like fucking shift that bitch.
So
like,
you know what I learned how to drive a stick on?
Hit me.
Was my grandfather's, I don't know, fucking. No, it was.
Caitlin just said Model T.
it had to be a 40s or 50s Ford grain truck.
So it was like four speed. Three speed?
I don't remember.
On the tree?
Was it on the tree?
No, it wasn't on the tree.
Probably a four
but no, this is it's a legit like grain cart.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So like I'm hauling corn, you know, and so that's what I learned to drive a stick on.
Yeah.
You know, and then yeah.
I learned how to use a clutch on a tractor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I converted that into a vehicle. And I was like, this is so much easier.
Yeah.
I taught Caitlin how to shift, how to drive a standard. Because
yeah, you taught her how to. Never mind.
Yeah. That too. No.
That's reverse. That's reverse.
That too. No, so I taught her because she always heard she really wanted a mini. So somehow it ended up being my mini. And then I bought another mini. But she didn't know how to drive stick though. And all the good ones were manual. So it was like, you need to learn how to drive. So Justin used to have a Mustang that was standard. And he left with the military for like a month. And I was like, I'm going to keep your car and make sure that it knows that. I'm going to teach her how to shift on it. So I taught her to shift on this big V8.
Yeah.
Absolute trash fucking. And I was like, if you can get this thing in gear.
Right. Oh, a Mustang is peak performance.
Yeah.
Especially the one that he has.
As long as you want to mow down people.
Is that the 4.3 liter?
4.6.
4.6.
Yeah. He had the the GT that was also 6,000 pounds and had 104 horsepower. And trash car. But I was like, if you can learn how to shift this thing. Because there's two ways to learn how to shift. You either learn on a manual that is absolute garbage or you learn one that has no forgiveness.
Right.
And if you can do either one of those, you can drive any manual in between.
Yeah.
So I get it. It was like the first car you ever bought, but it was a nightmare car. Like that thing was.
Oh, I beat the dog. So when I was buying.
With those lovely cut springs that were in it.
Yeah.
This was one of those. Somebody took a cutoff wheel and just like cut the springs and that's how it was lowered.
Yeah.
Oh, I love
it. When I was test driving that car because I bought it from a friend's dad. And I was test driving it and we were on I-10 because I lived out in Bernie and I went to put it. I was in fourth gear about like 5,000 RPM and went to shift it into sixth.
And you hit
and
third.
I hit third.
You mean fifth?
Yeah.
Oh,
that did not have a six speed transmission
in
it.
And I don't know, but I fucked up that transmission test driving it. And as soon as that happened, I was like, I'm committed now. I'm having to buy this now.
Yeah, it had somebody had taken like a grinder with a cutoff wheel and cut the springs and like dropped it and stuff like that. It was a nightmare. And I was like, if you can learn how to shift this car.
Yeah.
And so that was when I got into that whole fucking, you were out of the country and that Dodge decided he wanted to see if he was faster than your Ford. And I was like, you may not be faster in this car, but you're not a faster driver than me. But she learned how to shift on that. And even then it was just like, this is something you need to know how to do. But then we get in the discussion of like, you know, we want to talk about this generation that doesn't know how to shift and whatever. And it was like, go buy your kid. So you have a kid that turned 16, right? Go buy them a car that is the same age as they are. Buy them a 16-year-old car. Mm-hmm. What are you buying? So do the math. It's 2024. Buy them a 16-year-old car. It's
still hard to find a stick.
You're not finding a stick. It's still going to be power everything.
2008?
Yeah. Most of those cars are going to have backup cameras. It's power everything. Yeah. And these are on the base model.
So Logan, my son Logan, he's a car guy. I guarantee he could get in and drive a stick. It would take him
It's not hard.
And the first vehicle I bought was a stick. I'd never driven a stick before.
Yeah.
And I drove it home. And it was a very underpowered Ford fucking Ranger. It was lifted, a four cylinder. We had this big fucking hill. And I'm in it was a five speed. I'm in four. And I had to downshift a third to get the fuck up this hill going 50. It was bad. But yeah. And then, I drove that Viper.
Right. Yeah.
Which was a stick. Yep. Well, that's a whole different animal too.
Vipers are gated. And that's if you've never been on a gated shifter, that is not a,
I don't know what that means.
Okay. So gated shifters are, so if you look at the Viper, it has a full gate. So there's no forgiveness.
Yeah. It was,
it's all or nothing.
And the clutch was very,
the clutch is on or off.
Yeah.
You can't, you don't get to roll that clutch in and whatever. Yeah. So that's a double clutch synchromesh transmission with a gated shifter. Gated, I throw it close to third and it kind of falls in. You either nailed third or you missed.
There is
no in between.
When you're pushing horsepower like that, your clutches are on or off.
Yeah. My first experience of that was on a Ferrari. That was my first gated shifter.
Okay.
And I had a hard time getting that thing to go.
Yeah.
From standstill, just to get it to roll forward. I think I stalled it six times.
Because it's more throttle than clutch.
You have to give it so much more power than you're expecting for it to catch.
For example, my Ranger, I had 6 inches of clutch.
Yeah.
You could literally play that clutch, not touch the gas, and get that vehicle to move absolutely. Forward. You can't do that on
the Viper. I had a half inch of clutch.
Yeah. It's either on or off. But then would you understand that Vipers aren't meant? Cars like that, Vipers, Ferraris, Lambos, if you're lucky enough to get any of the new vets that have the actual manual transmission and stuff, these are not commuting cars. These are not a drive around during the day vehicle.
Your clutch, your first gear and going from a standstill to motion is built to be a launch.
Yeah.
It's not built to be controlled and easy.
I think people don't get it. It's so hard to shift. And I'm like, well, first off, first gear is literally just to get that out of essentially park.
Yeah.
You are at a standstill. First gear is to get it going forward. And then you're supposed to be in second. Because first gear, you probably launched it at about 6,000 RPMs. And now you're just instantly slamming it into second.
Yep.
And that's your speed build.
Yeah.
They're a different beast.
What do they call it? Gripping and ripping?
Yeah.
I mean, once you figured out that it was less clutch and more throttle, you could ease into it.
Yeah.
You can figure it out. And again, if you know how to do it, it's fine. I taught Caitlin how to shift, and then she wanted to learn how to ride a bike. And it was like, look, you already know how to shift.
Yeah.
Now at this point, you just need to learn how to lean that bike. If you can learn how to steer it, you already know. You know how to hear it. Yeah. You know how to, what shifting is that you have to clutch in and all that kind of stuff, how to walk the clutch out. You already know how to, that's all the same.
Yeah.
But the gated stuff, like the Viper, all of the high performance stuff. But once you get it to work, there is nothing like those high end systems. Yeah. Those things are, that's like anything. Anytime you can get into the high end perfection version of it.
Right.
I got into a really long discussion to get with a guy today about the STI Staccato. I don't think they're worth the money, but I will say that is the very high-end perfected version of that mechanic. I'm not going to deny the Staccato is the perfected version of the 1911 mechanic, I don't think they're worth the money.
There's higher ones.
I agree.
That are better quality, but they're double the price.
I would also, well, we can get it. That's a whole different thing. Well, because like the Shadow 2, I would put the Shadow 2 up against the Staccato S. It's half the price, probably works better. But you're talking about the 1911 mechanic, three moving parts, whatever. It's just that done on a precision level. The clutch in a Viper, the clutch in a Lambo, the clutch in a Ferrari and all that kind of stuff. It's still just a clutch. Yeah. It's just done on the high end precision level. It's familiar, but it's a different skill set. Mm-hmm. You have to know what you're getting into. It's not that they work better or worse. It's just far different. Yeah. So, and you have to decide if you want that, it's going to cost you.
Right.
Because you're paying for the hours that went into making that. Not that it works better. You're paying for what it is. But anyways, this show's been all over the fucking place.
On that note, let's fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll raise my glass.
Cheers. I'll second that motion.
Thanks for being my Freedom Friends, boys. And three little things. Words to live by. If Confucius was around, I'm sure he'd have something more clever than me. But anyways, that first one, Johnny.
Smoke on.
Scotty.
Oh, drink on.
And God damn it, boys.
Freedom the fuck on.
See you guys later.